Hello, good day to you all, and welcome to Marca's Eye on La Liga podcast as we break down the final day of the La Liga campaign. And what a final day it was. Finally wrapped up for Los Blancos. Was there ever any doubt that Real Madrid would get the job done away at Malaga? Cristiano Ronaldo's early goal settling any of the nerves that the travelling fans had. And my goodness, the party in Madrid on Sunday night, Monday morning, looked mightily impressive indeed. Barcelona able to get past Eibar just about. They were certainly tested, though, by the plucky side that have really, I think, just improved throughout the season and have been the surprise side of La Liga this campaign. And there were thrills and spills and a last-minute deciding goal in the race for the Europa League spots as well earlier on the Sunday. And that's really perhaps where the best and the most exciting action took place on the final 2 days of the La Liga campaign. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host. As always, we're breaking down the season with two of Marca's finest minds that I've been able to drag out from the office this evening. First up, a man who, of course, believed that with 20 minutes to go, Eibar were going to do the business against Barcelona. Mr. Ewan McTair joining us on the show. Ewan, slight heartbreak for yourself with the Eibar push that never really was able to withstand the Barca pressure right at the end.
What are you talking about, Ollie? I switched over with 20 minutes to go. I'm sure Eibar won 2-0, didn't lose 4-2 at all.
This is going to be an awkward discussion about the end of season, isn't it, for Ewan? Also on the show today, one of the other fantastic writers that Marca.com/EN has to offer, Mr. Mark Mayo, joining me on the show. And of course, a man who is happy to sit in the hot seat at times on the podcast as well. How are you doing, Mark? It was an exciting end to the La Liga campaign, as the campaign has been throughout the season with twists and turns. What did you find more enjoyable on the final Sunday, the Europa League games in the earlier kickoffs or those last two title deciders?
Well, there was a lot to enjoy about the last-minute title deciders and the Europa League and everything. The only problem I had was that I'd said beforehand that Cristiano Ronaldo was going to win the league for Real Madrid in the third minute, and he did it in the second minute. So I was kind of gutted, really, that I was so far off.
I hope that's not the Marca paycheck that's gone down the drain on that gamble as well, mate, because 60 seconds away from that would be absolutely awful. You would feel like a Barcelona fan this morning if that had happened to yourself, so I do hope that's not the case. We're going to start with the title deciders from Sunday and the thriller that we had between Barcelona and Eibar at the Camp Nou, and of course Real Madrid with a 2-0 victory over Malaga. Cristiano Ronaldo's early goal, I mean, gentlemen, that almost seemed to kind of kill it for us in terms of excitement after 2 minutes, because we'd all heard the rumours that Malaga were going to take their foot off the gas against Real Madrid, and that now with the destiny and the fate of the league title in their own hands, Madrid only needed a point. If they got an early goal, that would pretty much see the game out already. And of course it was going to be Cristiano Ronaldo, who has had a habit of finding early goals, as Real Madrid have in the stretch here, and they've had a habit of putting teams to the sword early as well in these final few games of the season. Ronaldo, no surprise really that he came up with the goods considering the form he's in, but was it almost slightly disheartening when you saw him get the opener?
It was a little bit for me. I think that we'll go on to the Barcelona game later, but I'm glad that it was such a good game because that kept the sort of entertainment levels up given all the build-up. But as soon as Ronaldo scored, I kind of looked at it and thought, do Malaga have two goals in them? And then even if they do, are Real Madrid going to fail to score, not even one goal again? So, yeah, it was a little bit too early, I think, given all the build-up and everything. If they'd have just waited maybe just late in the first half or early in the second half, there would have been those sort of dreams of some drama at the very least. But I thought Malaga did press Real Madrid quite well. Sandro Ramirez had a cracking game, and he was very unfortunate not to get a goal. I think they probably just about deserved on Malaga. But, it was always going to be a struggle for them, and having that first or second-minute goal in, it kind of knocked the stuffing out of them.
Ewan, with all the discussion about Malaga taking their foot off the gas at points and perhaps might go into this a little half-heartedly, if you will, was there any kind of raised eyebrows from yourself about the early goal for Cristiano Ronaldo? Not in the manner that it came or anything like that. And I'm not, excuse me, I'm not suggesting that there would be any cheating in any way, shape or form, but just that Malaga hadn't really had a chance to get into the game and Madrid strike earlier. It almost seemed a little convenient.
Yeah, I think with the whole pre-match discussion of how Malaga were maybe going to concede this game to Real Madrid, or at least that was the way many people looked at it, I think that will have only served to motivate the Malaga players further, because I mean, the normal result for that game when Real Madrid need to win the league is for Real Madrid to win and to, you know, really go for it early on and score a goal like they did. But I think Malaga players, a lot of them, especially the ones that had no Real Madrid leanings at all, they probably didn't want their name called into question. So I think they probably went out with a great determination not to make themselves look like they were accommodating Real Madrid. So I think they'll have been especially disheartened to have gone behind so early because, like you say, there will have been some eyebrows raised that maybe Malaga weren't up for this, maybe they weren't trying. But I haven't looked at the way they finished the game. I think nobody can really doubt that Malaga gave, you know, everything, especially Sandro, although maybe he had his own motivations. But Malaga certainly seemed to try. They just seemed a little bit caught off guard. But that kind of makes sense. I mean, Real Madrid knew one win or even a draw gets them the title. Of course, they're going to go for it right from the first minute.
There was a little frustration about Karim Benzema's goal that seemed to seal the deal, and Kameni was obviously very frustrated about it and making his protest known to the referee for a good 3 or 4 minutes after the goal went in. But as you say, Ewan, it was a Malaga side that in general did appear, as the game went on, to really try and stick it to Madrid and cause problems for them. No surprising considering that they've finished the season extremely well, obviously with the loss against Real Madrid this weekend. But are they going to be disappointed on reflection of their campaign, Malaga, when they look at how they finished the campaign and with an excellent run of form? There is signs that there could have been so much more from this Malaga side than an 11th place finish this year.
Yeah, they definitely had the squad to compete for Europe, I think, and Mitro coming in really showed that they maybe had the first couple of managerial appointments of the year a little bit off, and you know, if they can keep a hold of him, which it looks like they will, then you know, this Malaga team should definitely be in contention for Europa League spots next season. And it's just a shame that it's almost been a wasted season for them, considering, you know, the last couple of months have shown that they have what it takes to really get in amongst it. So yeah, they have a really good squad, and I think we should also remember, like, in the last month or so, Malaga have had a lot of serious injuries, and you know, they didn't even have like Wampy, who was one of the kind of more one of the leaders in the recent run of form. He's been out for the last couple of weeks now. His season ended early. So I think if they get a full, fresh squad for ahead of next season, keep most of their stars and even add one or two players in key positions, then, yeah, Malaga should look at the 2017-18 season with a lot of optimism.
In terms of Sandro Ramirez, though, and this Malaga side, I mean, he's already rumoured to be off to the Vicente Calderon for discussions about a move perhaps to Atletico Madrid. And is there a chance that this Malaga side gets torn up before it really gets a chance to do that?
I would say so. The problem is with Sandro Ramirez is his release clause is €6 million, and that, I mean, on today's market, I think pretty much any Premier League team and most of the top teams in Spain will be throwing that out, and then we'll have a long period of talks. But yeah, Atletico certainly seem to be leading those. Then there's Camacho and Fornals are both being talked about. We did a piece on the website actually before the games, and the Malaga fans kind of consider this, they didn't want the season to end because it was actually quite enjoyable. You know, I think they're a mid-table team, but they were winning games, they're playing good football, they had some star men. And next season, I think if they can keep the squad together, then they'll have a good crack at, you know, a top eight, top seven finish. But I don't know, I think the fact that they'll lose Sandro for, you know, you can't really reinvest that too comfortably. €6 million is not too much to go around there. I think they'll struggle to really push on unless they can find some absolute gems.
Yeah, since Jose Michel came in March, it's been a big uplift at the club, to say the least. And as you say, Mark, slightly disappointing for Malaga fans to see that this run of form gets ended prematurely by the season reaching its completion. What about in terms of Barcelona against Eibar? First and foremost, fantastic start for Eibar, taking the 2-goal lead and being able to play with Barca for the majority of that game. It really didn't give you the feeling that Barca were coming out all guns blazing. Do you think they heard ripples through the stadium or from the bench that Real Madrid had got that early goal and it kind of tapered them off slightly in terms of their adrenaline surge to get this game going and to finish on the front foot, which they of course eventually did with the 4-2 victory?
I think they heard ripples from the stadium by the fact that half of it were tourists and the other half were empty seats. I think that was, we talk about this build-up and everything that were Real Madrid going to do it. I'm pretty sure in Barcelona they all knew that Real Madrid were going to do it. There was no real sense of optimism, and I think that certainly was in the players. It was certainly in the stands, and you know, Eibar going 2-0 up was fantastic for them. But it was. There's been a number of games this year where Barcelona, because they haven't kicked into gear immediately against the smaller teams, they've just not bothered almost in a sense. They've just completely taken their foot off the pedal, and this was certainly one of those games.
Well, most of the teams that they've dropped points to have been the lesser sides in La Liga this season. I mean, that seemingly has been a problem all year, as you touched on there, Mark, for them. That has to change, because it's all well and good being able to beat the teams that are around you, and everybody talks about, you know, a Clásico can quite often be a decider for where the title goes, and that wasn't the case in the most recent one, of course. It's actually Barca's Achilles heel, it seemed this year, has been being slow and sloppy against the big side, against the lesser sides, excuse me, in La Liga.
Yeah, I think that's very true, and part of the reason for that is, I think, when, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid both do it, and when they take on these sort of weaker sides, they rotate, and that makes perfect sense. But I think Barcelona's problem has been that they don't maybe have the squad to be able to do that. So, you know, you look at the home match against Alaves that they lost, for example. I think they had Messi and Suarez out of that one. I think Messi was a little bit ill, but they rested Suarez as well. And at that point in the season, you had Alcácer starting up front, and that just didn't really work for Barcelona, whereas Real Madrid, whenever they've played their so-called B team, they've been able to get the job done. I think we've seen as well with when they drew 0-0 at home to Malaga. The week before that, Suarez deliberately got himself booked so that he could be suspended for this seemingly simple home game against the out-of-form Malaga side, and they ended up drawing 0-0 in that one because the backups to Suarez just weren't up to scratch. And I think that's where this, when we look back on it, that's where this league has been won. Real Madrid's B team has been stronger than Barcelona's B team. And you look at Barcelona, some of the games they've won with their starters, they've won away at Sevilla, they've won away at Atletico Madrid, away at Valencia, away at Real Madrid, obviously. Lots of really difficult away games that they've come out on top when their starters have played. I don't think there's any doubting that their starting 11 are one of the best in the world still, but their backups just haven't really done the job for them when they've tried to rotate.
Is there a case for Barcelona as an excuse that, you know, they focus so much on MSN and getting the money out to the big players in their starting 11 that they don't and cannot afford the same sort of backup quality that Real Madrid have? Is that a valid excuse in any way, shape or form? Is that more of a damning statement to put on Barcelona? Because to me, considering 90% of players around the globe would go to Real Madrid or Barcelona when offered a contract because they are Real Madrid or Barcelona, it seems like there should be no excuse for Barcelona not having that sort of depth in their side to similar levels that Madrid have at the moment. Whether that lasts for very long with the number of departures that we're expecting from Los Blancos this season at the end of the year is another case entirely. But Barca shouldn't have these same depth problems. Why do they have it?
I think it's down to management, really. If you look at how Zidane has implemented his rotation policy, it's actually been very different from what he said, because for the whole first half of the season, he was saying, BBC are my front three, BBC are my front three, they're non-negotiable, was quite often the line he used. And, you know, that was a pretty questionable thing to be saying, given how Morata has always been outscoring Benzema this year. Bale wasn't on great form, and it was the fact that Bale has been injured for a lot of the season has made that less of an issue, that kind of bias in a sense towards the BBC has gone away, and therefore they've had players like Isco and Asensio who have stepped up. But because the MSN have always been there this year, and they always, you know, that's one of the things about Barcelona that the management haven't been able to address, is that when it came to signing a player this year, Alcácer was the only one who really wanted to come, and they were really able to throw the money at, because a lot of other players such as Kevin Gamero kind of thought that they'd be, you know, second string. And this is why I think it's going to be difficult in this summer. You alluded to it there, the fact that Real Madrid are going to have to go and sign players this summer. And that, yeah, they'll have the rotation and the Champions medals and everything to entice them. But are those players going to be happy with being that kind of James Rodriguez replacement and just be on the bench? Whereas Barcelona, obviously, their signings this year haven't worked so much, but they'll be, you know, embedded in a bit more. So it's going to be a tough one to see how the new management at Barcelona deal with that, and whether they can get players like Alcácer to actually be a reliable option anyhow for the MSN.
Finishing with a 4-2 victory against Eibar, and Mark before we allow him to start drifting too further down the timeline in terms of starting to predict next season's problems for Real Madrid and Barcelona.
I already know that Leganés are going to win the league next year, so there's a very, very short conversation when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, I've been going back through the early show predictions, and I have to say that not many of them are pretty for where all of us stand at the moment. So we won't start taking predictions just yet on anything at all right now. But in terms of Barcelona, finishing with the 4-2 victory, obviously Luis Enrique gets a win in his final game at the Camp Nou, and the La Liga goodbye for them. Does Barcelona's successful season rely on a Copa del Rey final victory? Is the Camp Nou even that bothered about a Copa del Rey final victory in terms of silverware, because the two that they seem to prioritise every year, as they arguably rightfully should, are the Champions League and La Liga. They're out of the Champions League, they're not going to be in the final, they've lost La Liga already to Real Madrid, and is it already a disappointing and unsuccessful season for Barca, and will a Copa del Rey win change that in any way, shape or form?
Yeah, you do have to wonder what the way the fans view this final, but I think the players will be fully motivated. I mean, for so many of the Barcelona squad, they're at this point where they have so many titles that they're on course to maybe set records for the number of titles won by a player ever. I mean, you look at Dani Alves, for example, and how many he's racked up by being at the right club at the right moment, and so many of these Barcelona players, just by being at Barcelona for a decade, have won so many trophies already, and I think it's almost at the point where it's quantity over quality of tournament for some of them. I mean, another medal is another medal, and if that can take them to a milestone in terms of tournaments won, then that's going to be something to motivate them. From the fans' point of view, I think it could be a little bit different, because, as you mentioned, they're going to be, you know, this cup final comes sandwiched in between Real Madrid's La Liga victory and potential Champions League victory, so it's not, they probably won't be celebrating too hard if they do. Pick up this cup, and I don't think we'll see anything like the celebrations we saw at Cibeles last night if Barcelona, you know, edge past Alaves and at the Calderon.
I think it's quite often a case of the fear of humiliation, the fear of them losing to Alaves in the cup final. Obviously, Real Madrid had a great season, no matter what happens there. The banana skin that it is, the onus that would be on them to lose that game, I think is enough of a motivation to mean that they'll win it. I don't think they'll celebrate it hard, but there is a lot of fear that there'll be that team that lost to Alaves in the final, and that'll be pretty damaging for them if it does happen.
You were just finally on Barcelona. We spoke very briefly before coming on the show today about an idea that perhaps it was surprising to see Barcelona try and fight back as hard as they did against Eibar. And your train of thought was because it would have been better for Eibar perhaps to be as seen as the plucky underdog that stole the title away from Barcelona, as opposed to, as it stands at the moment, Real Madrid beating them to the title on the last day of the season, because Barcelona got the victory, but it was still Real Madrid being the better side over the 38 games of the season then, that meant that that Barcelona missed out on the title. Is that something you genuinely buy behind? Is that just a train of thought that was off the top of the head before we came on? I mean, I'm just wondering about if you actually saw that as a realistic kind of mentality to have. Surely fans would be more frustrated at Barca losing to another small side, and it would be seen as a greater problem that the minnow sides, if you will, and not to discredit Eibar in any way, they've had a great season, but compared to Barcelona, you expect Barcelona to walk all over them.
I think if Barcelona had, you know, such a good chance of winning the league, then of course, you know, they want to wipe Eibar aside and really just hope. But I think the fact that, you know, Real Madrid had scored early on, that they were always kind of going to win that game in Malaga, or at least not lose it, it means that at the end of the day, the poster boys of that Real Madrid La Liga success are Ronaldo and Benzema. They scored the goals. Real Madrid, you know, They crossed the finish line. They didn't just win by default because the other team also lost. So I think, you know, some Barcelona fans would almost, you know, have preferred if Real Madrid were going to win anyway and they were on course to victory, then it might almost be, you know, might almost look better, reflect better, if it was, you know, little fluffy-haired Takashi Inoue who was the sort of hero that gave Real Madrid the title, and if it almost deemed Ronaldo and Benzema's goals in Malaga worthless. It's not, you know, I'm sure there's Only a few fans maybe thought that way, but if Real Madrid were going to win the league, then it might almost look a little bit better on Barcelona if it seemed that they were going to win it even without this what will be heavily celebrated win in Malaga.
Mark, thoughts on Ewan's kind of prognosis there about how to interpret the potential Eibar victory, as it were?
I don't know. I think there's the idea that Barcelona fans will be looking for a positive is certainly, you know, there will be a lot of Barcelona fans looking for positives. But I think that there's probably a lot of fans in the Camp Nou that have experienced enough and have seen football enough that will probably just, you know, shrug their shoulders and walk off and hope for next year when it comes to the end of the season and the way that it panned out for them. I don't know how fans in Spain necessarily perceive Eibar, because I know that fans in Britain, they love an underdog, but I don't know if fans in Spain necessarily have that same mentality.
Yeah, I'm sure Barca fans probably wouldn't have been too enamoured by the underdog coming good on the last day of the season if Eibar had held on to that victory. I mean, I like the idea, Ewan. I certainly don't mean to try and knock it in any way, shape or form. I kind of see that idea of, take the glory away from Real Madrid, but we'll just pan it ourselves.
I'm just looking for ways for both Barcelona and Eibar fans to be optimistic and to leave the Camp Nou in good spirits. But yeah, I don't think there was too much happiness as the fans walked out that stadium yesterday.
Just finally, before we move away onto the Europa League clashes from earlier in the day for the three-way race for the two Europa League spots, what do you make of the PK chant that came out from the Real Madrid players as well as the fans? The kind of PK, hush your mouth, stop moaning, we're Real Madrid, a chant that was being sung around the place. I mean, is there any need for the players to get involved in that as well? I know there's the big rivalry, obviously, between Barcelona and Real Madrid. We don't need to talk about that anymore. But it seems like an unnecessary middle finger to stick up at Gerard Piqué, who has been having a good old moan this season at plenty of times about refereeing bias and things like that with Real Madrid. Just didn't seem like this needed to be done as a slight taint, perhaps, on the Real Madrid party.
Yeah, I don't really see any point for it. I just think one of the things that fans love and hate at the same time are the politics of Spanish football, because it's one of the leagues that has the most politics of, you know, any European league, certainly. And if that gets personal, then I think that's a detriment to it. You can love the fact that there are two sides that are always hating each other, and if a player chants about a side or talks about a team, then, you know, that can be kind of construed as fair enough. That's the fair game. But I don't know, I kind of think that when it gets down to a team of victors, whatever you want to call them, like chanting about a player that's lost, not only does it make a rod for their own back, but it's also just a little bit disrespectful to someone who obviously wants his own team to win.
Surely you wouldn't stand for that sort of bad-natured chanting by fellow teammates if you were in there.
No, I mean, well, I'm Scottish, so our football is all very nice and civil, of course. I don't know anything about chanting. But no, I think it's just a little bit silly from the Real Madrid players, because, I mean, this was their first league in 5 years, and, you know, the form book sort of suggests that over the next 5 years, Piqué will, you know, get the last laugh again. He'll, you know, in the next few years, Barcelona will surely win another league at, you know, many of these Real Madrid players' expense. So then they just open themselves up to be hit back by you know, chants of similar nature. So, I mean, they've won this time, but it's not like they've been winning for the last two or three seasons, and that they're guaranteed to win to get the better of Piqué for the next two or three seasons as well. So, yeah, they just kind of open themselves up to it when the shoe's on the other foot.
I suppose we could talk about the fact that Piqué did that whole Kevin Roldan chant or whatever it was, but then I kind of felt like There's two different ways of going about it. You can go about it and sort of poke fun at something, or you can chant along with fans who, you know, those fans are probably also chanting some not very nice things, you know, like explicit language, etc. So I think there's two different ways of going about it, and it didn't seem to me to be jovial. It didn't seem to me to be fun, which I would hope that it would be.
Yeah, just keep it classy. Like, that's all I think. If you're going to win, be a gracious winner. There's no need to go tit for tat and that sort of thing. And if they kept it classy, it looks worse on Piqué at the end of the day. So, yeah, I I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of it personally. What I was a big fan of, though, was a thrilling La Liga title race in the end, despite it only being a two-horse race, was fantastic to follow this season. When we come back here on the show, we're going to quickly look at the race for the Europa League spots as it all went down to the wire between Bilbao, Villarreal and Real Sociedad. More on that when we come back. Welcome back to Marker's Eye on La Liga podcast. Remember, get on to Twitter at Marker in English, where you can find all the latest and breaking news as we head into the postseason. Of course, transfer rumours flying around already. We'll talk about some of those in just a few minutes here on the show with myself, Ollie Wilson, and guest Ewan McTare, E. McTare on Twitter, and of course, Mark Mayo. That Mark Mayo on Twitter. That Mark Mayo. Are there any other Mark Mayos that we need to be wary of, Mark, that we might get confused with at all? Or is that Mark Mayo the statement that makes sure that we know it's definitely you?
I think there probably is an at Mark Mayo, but it's taken when I joined it. But I'm more worried by when I see someone else who is at that. I think that they've kind of, that's my thing. Like, and then someone else has gone, oh, they're that person. But I'm not sure, I'm not too comfortable with that.
Stealing your thunder. What about the Mark Mayo as well? I mean, that's the only thing that surely that could usurp that Mark Mayo would be at the Mark Mayo. Because that's not just a Mark Mayo, that's the Mark Mayo.
I don't know, I haven't got a blue tick yet. But if I do ever get a blue tick, then maybe I'll have to go to official Mark Mayo to get away from the idea that there's anyone else out there who's copying.
I like that. The official Mark Mayo. Yeah, nice. You are your own official entity. Very well. Right, let's talk about the thrills and spills then between Villarreal, Real Sociedad, and of course Athletic Club Bilbao. And those who are expecting perhaps Atletico on the home soil at the Vicente Calderon to be a little easier to take down with their injury problems that they had going into this game, of course, particularly on the defensive line. Athletic Club made it a little difficult for themselves. Fernando Torres coming out with a brace in the first 11 minutes of the game. That was probably one of the most surprising lines that I saw in terms of the final Sunday of the La Liga campaign. And Atletico Madrid, an excellent way to say goodbye to their time at the Calderon. But a disaster for Ernesto Valverde's side, losing and, of course, handing the opportunity to Real Sociedad to jump ahead of them in that race for the European spots. A tough way, perhaps, for Valverde to confirm his credentials to perhaps move to the Nou Camp, as many, particularly some people around the market offices, are expecting. Your thoughts, firstly, on the goodbye to the Calderon, though, for Atletico Madrid, gentlemen?
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere, I think, the whole day, and the way the club did it was, I thought it was, you know, it wasn't too over the top, but it was, you know, it was nostalgic enough and sentimental enough. And then obviously someone had the words in Fernando Torres here and said, you know, how perfect would it be if you got a couple of goals in this one, and he delivered. I mean, he's been going to the Calderon since he was 10, that's like 22 years ago, and I think it was kind of fitting that he was the one that popped up and got the two early goals and really just got the party started. And to be fair to Athletic, you sort of felt a little bit sorry for Athletic, because they had, you know, this really tough fixture and they really had to get, you know, a win in this one or at least a draw. So they had to kind of come and be the spoil sports to the Calderon send off, and I think they did quite a good job of it once they went behind. You know, they really pushed Athletic and Atletico, and obviously got the one goal back, and at that point it looked like they might push and get that second goal, but Angel Correa came on after another emotional send off for a former Chelsea legend who went off in the 88th minute, not the 26th, and Thiago comes off the pitch and Angel Correa comes on and scores with his first touch, and that really just ended Athletic's hopes, although at that point obviously they were still in with a chance, but Real Sociedad did their job up in Vigo.
It's a bit of a shame that Correa scored that 89th minute goal, and Torres doesn't get to be the final scorer as well at the Calderon, as well as getting the party started, of course. For Bilbao, this is a side that at times, Mark, has played some excellent football throughout this season. It's just been consistency. There are a number of players that could easily be, like many teams in the middle of the pack in La Liga, be kind of pilfered off. One of them is the man that got on the score sheet in Archie Williams, who I really rate as a youngster coming through this Bilbao side. We saw flashes of it last year. A little bit more consistency, but not enough still this season. But particularly when he plays that lone up front role, he adds a bit of extra, a bit of something different compared to Adarice when he's the centre forward man, as Bilbao started with this weekend. Is this a side that, again, because they haven't reached the Europa League this year, is in a real danger of being broken up and sent off elsewhere around La Liga and around Europe? Because there's some real quality running through it.
Well, I think if Alaves lose, I think they're in the Europa. So that'll be very. If they're not, then they're in deep trouble, because a lot of teams are looking at Iñaki Williams, and I see a player who's very raw. He's very. I think he needs to mature a lot and get his decision making up to a level that would be required in certainly in the Premier League and the other top leagues around Europe. But I don't know, I think it's kind of a question of how much further they can go, rather. How much further they can get another manager, because they've had Bielsa, they've had Valverde, and they've always kind of hit that glass ceiling in effect. And whether they can actually go on again and reach the Champions League once more and, you know, pressure properly for a major title. I just kind of doubt it, sadly, because, you know, the way they're playing, or they've been playing under Valverde, is just, it's not been quite dogged enough. When they go away from home, they've just been, you know, completely average on a lot of games. And I question any team, this is why I'm quite happy that Real Sociedad got into the top six. I question any team that can play really good football at home and then goes away and just gets beaten by pretty average teams. And that's something that the new coach, I think Valverde will leave, will have to address immediately.
Is that a damnation on Valverde and something that he could take to the Camp Nou if he ends up going there, Mark?
Yeah, I think it definitely could be. I think it's something that he's going to have to work out himself. Obviously, he's going to have better players and he's going to have a different style of football that he has to adapt to more so than he would less control he'd have over an Athletic team. And I don't know, I think that when you're a club like Bilbao, you know that the it's not constraining in a way, but the way that they bring in players is obviously very unique. And he won't have that pressure at Barcelona. He won't have those sort of mandates to fulfil. So I think he'll be better for it, but as Athletic will be left behind, and I think they'll struggle to push on much further.
Of course, you mentioned that Real Sociedad did take their opportunity with Bilbao slipping up at the Calderon. They left it late, though. I mean, everybody remembers the Sergio Aguero winner for Manchester City in the last minute of the final day of the Premier League season that gave them the Premier League title. Wan Mi with a bit of the Agueros, if you will. 93rd minute goal to pull them level against Celta Vigo, who have been really disruptive for Sociedad's push towards Europa League football all evening. And just a thrilling way for Sociedad to put their place in intercontinental football next season.
Yeah, it's one of these kind of moments that I think teams at that kind of area of the La Liga table sort of live for. I mean, Real Sociedad are really going to struggle to ever, you know, win a Copa del Rey or anything like that. So the sort of, like Mark said, the sort of glass ceiling that these kind of teams can sort of push for probably is Europa League qualification, maybe Champions League qualification. So to secure it in fashion like that is... I don't think that's we should downplay that at all. That was fantastic for those fans and the kind of moment that they live for. And to be able to do it by snatching that Europa League place away from your bash rivals is even more so. So, yeah, I mean, they left it late, but they got the job done. And I think over the course of the season, like Mark says, the fact that Real Sociedad have been able to play well both at home and away, you know, that consistency probably means that they're in a better shape to do something if in the Europa League next season.
It feels as well like this Sociedad side just has a little balance to it. They're not reliant, it seems, on one individual player to pull them out of a struggle. I mean, you look at Wan Mi this season with 11 goals, Carlos Vela with 9 himself, William Jose with 12. Goals come from different areas of the field and from a number of different people. You've got Joao Prieto in the heart of the midfield as well with 8 goals this season. I mean, it's not a side that is really reliant on one individual, and that just seems to be something that's really helped them in the final six games of the season that they've gone unbeaten in to get to this point.
Yeah, it suits their mentality very well because, I mean, you've listed those players there. I don't think any of them I would pick out as someone who's good enough to be a leading the line kind of man. William Jose started very well. I've never really rated Juanmi, and yet he's obviously got a few important goals. So I think if you're they're kind of a team of unsung heroes, the likes of Prieto and Ilan Amendi are both really good players, but the way that they go about their game, they're not the ones who turn up with the kind of 90th minute winner, and they're not the ones who necessarily put in a 9 out of 10 performance at any stage of the season, but you always get that kind of 6.5, 7 out of 10, and I think that's what drove them over the line in the end.
And Villarreal aside, they've relied heavily on their defensive ability this season, the second best defence in La Liga, only 33 goals conceded this year from the Yellow Submarine. This is by no means a sinking ship going down to the depths. This is a submarine that is rising back up to resurface again in European football, once more in the Europa League for next season with their fifth place finish. And vast improvements, it seems, defensively on last year, when it would have been so easy for this side to kind of falter, considering it had its star centre-back nicked away from them at the start of the campaign in Eric Bailly.
And even for this game here against Valencia, their two starting centre-backs for the season, Musacchio and Victor Ruiz, they were both injured. They weren't available. They've also had their starting goalkeeper, Sergio Asenjo, go down. So they started this game with, you know, the three players closest to their own goal all out. And, you know, they only conceded once against Valencia and won 3-1. So again, you know, this is, that kind of shows that they have a great defensive system in place, one that Fran Escriba has been able to put in, and that it's not just because they have good defensive players.
Are these the best two sides for La Liga in terms of getting into European competition for next season? You touched on it already that Bilbao has struggled away from home so much this year. Sociedad and Villarreal are the best equipped to have successful campaigns in the Europa League next year.
Definitely Villarreal. They're so experienced, and I think they, bar one absolute nightmarish night against Roma earlier this year, I think they'd have gone on and had a good crack at the quarters or the semis of the Europa League. And Real Sociedad, time will tell. It depends how much investment, these kind of things. Obviously, there's a chance that clubs will come in and throw £30 million at Ilan Mendy or someone like that. So things can be different for them. But I rate Eusebio Sacristán a lot, and I think that they've got a good chance with him of going, you know, certainly past the group stage of the Europa League, because I think the travelling thing can't be overemphasised too much in that competition, because you're not going to Germany and Italy so much. You're going to Russia, you're going to Romania, you're going to really some of the provinces of Europe, and coming out with a result there is obviously what stunted Athletic Club, and I think Sociedad have a decent chance of getting something at those sort of places.
And of course, quickly, Sampaoli as well, saying goodbye to Sevilla with a 5-0 victory on Saturday night against Osasuna too. Nice way for Sampaoli to go out. Overrated or underrated as a manager, though, this season?
I think what he's done with Sevilla has been really special. And, you know, there was a lot of concern at Sevilla, I think, at the start of the season after Unai Emery had won them three Europa Leagues and taken them to cup finals and had done so much with them. I think when he left, there was a concern that, you know, the goal was, you know, to get that top four finish, but I'm sure there were some people worried that Sevilla might drop out of Europe altogether. And Sampaoli had really had success with Chile, and there was a concern of, well, can that intensity work over a 38 game season? And we've seen that it can't really, because the team have dropped off a little bit in the last couple of months, but they've done so well when they were on form that they've been able to quite comfortably seal that top four spot. And I think this season has to go down as better than last season, even though they won the Europa League, because they progressed in the Champions League. They were quite close against Leicester to going through. So I think this has been progress for Sevilla, but once again, they almost have to start from scratch and with their manager and surely several members of the squad getting picked off.
All right, gents, a few last ones to wrap up the La Liga season for everybody before we have a quick look ahead to the Copa del Rey final, of course, and I need somebody to tell me why everybody thinks Alaves have such a great chance against Barcelona, because I'm still not seeing it personally. So let's go with the most disappointing side in La Liga this season then for each of you. Let's start with you, Mark.
I would have to say Las Palmas, because they started the season so well and they have a really nice team. They've got some really good players. But Quique Setién has, you know, he said he's leaving and there's been a lot of controversy around the comments and sort of stuff that's been going on behind the scenes. But the way they've collapsed in the second half of the season, their defence in particular, I think it's just such a shame, because this is a team that has been making upward progress for so many years now. And quite often I think the key thing going into next season is any momentum that you have is so important. And they just completely lack momentum and they're in real danger now if they don't make the right choice in the transfer window and in the coaching market of dropping into some sort of relegation battle next year.
How about yourself, Ewan?
I think for me it has to be Valencia. I mean, this team with the resources they have, and I know they've struggled financially in the last couple of years and have, you know, tremendous debt, but when it came to their budget for this season, they still had one of the largest in the division, and for them to finish in 12th place and to even be threatened with relegation earlier in the season, I think that has to go down as a major disappointment.
The most surprising team with quality then for you, Ewan, the one you're most surprised and happy for? I've got half a feeling of what you're going to say.
It'd be easy to say Eibar, and I think, you know, for Eibar to finish in the top half of the La Liga table, I mean, I don't think we can talk about that enough, because this is a team that is from a town of 27,000 people, shouldn't even be in the division. Their former president said they're naturally a third division team and they're in the top 10 of Spain, so that has to be commended. But I think I would go for Alaves, because for them, they've even finished above Eibar in 9th place, they've reached a cup final, and I think what they've done has been really special, because last season they'd won the second division with Jose Bordalas, but they took the sort of at the time it seemed very harsh decision to sack him for winning the division, but it's panned out perfectly for them under Pellegrino, because last season they were a really turgid sort of team. They won so many games 1-0 and they kind of limped their way towards that title, and he's came in and freshened the team up a little bit, and they can play defensively, they can play attacking, and it's really worked well for them. So I've been really really encouraged by what Alaves have done this season, and it could yet finish off with an even greater night.
And yourself, Mark?
Yeah, I think Alaves and Eibar both deserve mentions. I think Leganes definitely, even though the fact that the amount of points they've got would generally see them relegated, the fact that they've stayed in the division is absolutely huge. But I'm actually going to say Espanyol, because they were kind of mid-table nothing team for a lot of the year, or a lot of the last few years rather, but this year they've finished comfortably inside the top half, and I think large amounts of their season have been really entertaining. You think of the 6-4 with Sevilla, the 4-3 win over Espanyol, or against Las Palmas, sorry, the 3-3 draw they had with Eibar in the year. I think for a team, it's so difficult for a team that is so much in the shadow of the local rival that it's so hard for them to get fans through the door. And Quique Sanchez Flores has once again showed that he's actually a very, very good manager.
And just finally, give us a handful of names who would be in your La Liga starting 11 for this season, outside of those top three clubs. Because it seems that every year when an all-star 11 of La Liga gets made, it's always made up of Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid players. As you'd expect with Atletico Madrid, obviously, generally being the best defence in the league and those two being the best attacking sides in the league, you'd expect that. But who are the players outside that maybe kind of get overlooked in their season this year? I think for me, one of them has to be Iago Aspas for Celta Vigo, for a side that have struggled so much, particularly towards the end of the season. His goal scoring this year has been so crucial for them.
Yeah, he's definitely been one of the stars, and I think sticking with Mark's team of Espanyol, I think Pablo Piatti needs a special mention, because he scored, he's in double figures for goals and assists, and I think he's responsible for between 40 and 50% of all of Espanyol's goals he's been involved in then. So he's been a really special one, and his loan from Valencia ends this summer, so that's a player they'll need to replace if they're going to replicate this good season. He's been one that's really impressed me, and maybe a little further back, I'd give special mention to Asier Yarramendi. I mean, the way he's gone back to Real Sociedad and after maybe not doing so well at Real Madrid, and he's just been the engine room of that team, and as we said, they're just such a balanced team, and I think, you know, he's contributed so much in defence and in attack, and just giving them, you know, a real sort of world-class player in the centre of the park, and Although he might not, you know, score that many goals, or it's almost what we're saying, Real Sociedad aren't a team that get last minute, you know, front page winners. But what he's done has just been quietly very, very effective.
Yeah, good time to save that last minute front page winners for the final day of the season when they really needed it. And Illarramendi, whether he got a fair shot at Real Madrid is another question for another day, I'm sure. How about yourself, Mark? Those sorts of players that just haven't quite been given the headlines that they deserve this year and you put in a starting 11 for La Liga.
Yeah, Piatti was definitely one I was thinking. Sergi Enrich of Eibar has been fantastic as well. I'd actually say the two goalkeepers, Carlos Kameni and Guillermo Ochoa from Granada, have had really good seasons. They've certainly, you know, they're the type of goalkeepers who are a bit unorthodox, a bit eccentric, but I think they've done their job as well as I could imagine anyone else doing it, that's for sure. I think Theo Hernandez at Alaves, he's obviously going to be grabbing the headlines this summer, but I think it's justified in the way that he's had a cracking season. His first year in La Liga, and he's been very comfortable as well. I think he deserves a mention.
And a first season as well in La Liga with us doing the podcast, and that is the La Liga season all wrapped up. Just quickly, the chances of Alaves turning over, pulling the upset and getting Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final. Ewan McTeer, slim to none or no hope at all?
I think Mark and I both rate them. I think Alaves they shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, the last few weeks they've been winning. They've rested their starters in the last few away games, but they've played them at home and they've kept on picking up results. They have, you know, a very balanced team with, you know, two fantastic fullbacks, a good defence, and then some quality up front with Deverson. So, yeah, I think if Barcelona sort of go into this with the sort of poor mentality that we sort of doubt them needing to avoid, then yeah, this is there for the taking for Alaves. This is a first cup final, and you know, they've got nothing to lose. They're going to go for it, and you know, probably, you know, sense dictates that Barcelona will win it, but I think this is going to be a lot closer than most people think.
A first cup final though, Mark, I mean, that's always going to get under the skin slightly, and particularly somewhere like the Vicente Calderon, of course, and its final game hosting any sort of football match before it's torn down. I mean, the atmosphere is always going to be enthralling in Vicente Calderon, particularly for a Copa del Rey final, let alone when Atletico Madrid are playing, of course, whether it be in La Liga or the Champions League. Barcelona are the experienced ones. They're going to have probably more fans in the stadium as well. It's going to be an intimidating atmosphere for Alaves to go into in their first cup final, despite the form. You still think that Barcelona are going to aren't going to walk all over them going into this? Do you have that same hope then?
Well, I think they've got a really good chance of taking it to extra time. I think Barcelona aren't necessarily going to come flying out the blocks, and we're looking at maybe 0-0 sort of scoreline after 90 minutes. I do expect Barcelona to win it at the end of the day, of course, but this Alaves team, they're going to feel the weight of history on their shoulders. They're probably going to walk into that stadium and realise that this is the last proper game to be held at the Vicente Calderon, and they'll just imagine how good it'll be if they can be a fantastic fairy tale to end what is a pretty much a fairy tale stadium. So, you know, I do think the weight of the occasion will get on them, sadly.
So you're saying that there won't be a last scorer at the Vicente Calderon. That'd be interesting indeed. I'd love to see if it went to 0-0, perhaps a bit of extra time and penalties as well, although after penalty shootouts in football recently, I don't think anybody wants to see those anymore. We need to find a way to get rid of those and just make sure the right teams go through. I'll say no more than that. Let's leave it there then for today. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with a Champions League final recap as well as the Copa del Rey recap. We'll pile those into one show after the game in Cardiff between Juventus and Real Madrid as they look to do the double. It's been Cristiano Ronaldo's worst ever season in La Liga in front of goal. Only 25 scored in his first season in La Liga for Real Madrid. He only scored 26, yet he's still lifting the La Liga trophy this season. Ewan, Mark, a big thanks for joining us on the show throughout this season. Of course, to Jason Aldo as well, and Simon Harrison, of course, for being guests on the show. David Garrido as well has popped up from time to time. Ewan, how do you plan to spend the summer? Feet up relaxing, or will you be keeping an eye on all the transfer dealings that we're now going to have to deal with in La Liga throughout the off-season?
Well, I thought the football was just a warm-up for the transfer season. I'm excited for it.
Trying to become La Liga's equivalent of Jim White. I bet you've got the yellow tie in the closet somewhere as well, waiting to go. Mark, how about yourself? Any trips or travelling around out to Spain at all? Or are you going to be boots on the ground, or in the office, should I say, and staying I guess, glued to the laptop typing away the transfer stories as they come through.
I am delighted by the fact there's going to be no competitions to talk about. There's no European Championships, no Olympics or anything. It should be far nicer. But I am hoping to go. Certainly, when the fixtures are announced, I'll certainly be planning a few trips around Spain, France and Italy as well. Go see a few matches then.
Well, I'm sure you'll be able to catch everything that Ewan and Mark write during the transfer season on marker.com/EN. Get onto Facebook as well. Just type in Marker in English. You can like and follow the page on there. Get onto Twitter at Marker in English, all one word, and you can follow all of the breaking news that comes out during the transfer period and in the build-up to the new La Liga season. You can follow Ewan at emcter on Twitter and Mark at the Mark. That. Mark May, I've got confused already. You just need to change it to that official Mark Mayo one, and we'll all be fine. At that Mark Mayo to follow Mark on there. In the meantime, we'll be back in a few weeks' time with our Champions League look back in Copa del Rey. Look back, will Barcelona salvage something from the season? Will Real Madrid get another European crown? Or will Juventus, the old lady of Italian football, be too stubborn defensively and too good going forward with Dybala and Higuain and be able to lift a European crown for Italy once again? We will find that out in a few weeks' time. In the meantime, enjoy the football. Enjoy the peace and quiet with the La Liga season done. Congratulations to Real Madrid. We'll see you all very soon indeed. Have a good one.